podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. I'm your host, Craig Resnick Hansen, and today I'm joined by Phil Ham. Phil is the editor of TWTD, an Ipswich Town fan site and message board. Phil's been the editor over there for a long time, since 1995, as well as also working for various other outlets, including the BBC. He's a sports journalist with years of experience and a long-suffering Ipswich Town fan. Let's hear what he's got to say about the town. Hi, Phil. Thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad.
If you hear any sort of loud dragon-like grunts or snores, don't be alarmed. I've got my French bulldog Winston on the floor here next to me. My wife and daughter are away, so I'm in charge of him on my own, so it can't be helped. But hopefully you stay nice and quiet. Phil, we'll get into it as we normally do with everyone. The first question has to be, how did you end up supporting Ipswich Town? What's your Ipswich story?
Well, I was born in Ipswich. Ipswich isn't very big, so wherever you're born in Ipswich, you're not very far away from the football ground anyway. But my parents moved to Suffolk from Essex in the early 60s. And my dad was a Tottenham fan. And they moved in 61. And Tottenham had just won the double, hadn't they, at that point, 60-61. And so my dad moved to Suffolk and he started watching Ipswich. And of course, Ipswich won the league that year. And he did that thing that no one's supposed to do, of change clubs. Because I don't think he ever followed Tottenham, partly because his twin brother's a Tottenham fan as well. So I think it meant that there was a bit of a rivalry between the two of them. So Ipswich, he went from being a double winner with Tottenham to a first division title winner for the first time with Ipswich in his first year watching Ipswich and never looked back. So inevitably, when I kind of started to get interested in football, Ipswich was the club that I supported.
And I understand that you are a journalist doing a lot of work for various newspapers on the BBC and so on. Did you do that? Did you go straight to university, straight into journalism? Was that something that from an early age you were not only an Ipswich fan, but also a football journalist?
Well, yeah, I mean, this strangely, when we were about seven or eight, the Cubs, we were given a tour of Portman Road. And we went on the tour. Anyway, after we went on the tour, the RKler said to us that everyone had to write an account of it. And that the best one would go into the parish magazine. And so anyway, I wrote mine, everyone else wrote this, and I was surprised to discover that I won. And so my first published work on Ipswich Town was at about the age of seven. the Jesuits say about, give me a boy at seven and I'll show you the man. Well, quite literally. But my kind of path into journalism wasn't as far from typical in that I did a social science degree and finished the social science degree. And then one of my mates, who's also finished his degree, was kind of offered the chance to run what was then Those Were the Days, the fanzine. And he sort of mentioned this to me in the pub one night. And I said, well, because we're both not really a bit directionless in life at that point, and I thought, well, I'll do that because it will be a bit of an opportunity to write a few things and get a portfolio together, that kind of thing. So we started doing that. And then, of course, the internet happened only really a year or so later. Well, I'd gone back to university again at Leicester to do sociology of sport. And so TWTD, as it sort of is now, sort of took off from there. And then within a year or so, I started doing a column for the Evening Star here, which lasted about 15 years in the end. TWTD started making money at one point eventually. And in 2000, I went sort of full time on that whilst freelancing then for the Star. And then doing bits and bobs for other people. Irish Examiner did quite a lot of stuff for them when Roy Keane was manager and Mick McCarthy was manager and people like Daryl Murphy and David McGoldrick were here and Stephen Hunt and Noel Hunt. And then, did the BBC show with Kevin Beattie and Mark Murphy, who used to be the BBC presenter, the breakfast presenter at BBC Suffolk. Did that for about 11 years. Then we got And then latterly, Terry Butcher, who took over after Beat died. And then we turned that into a podcast, sort of once the when the BBC dumped us last summer, dumped us along with a lot of other people. And so that's where we are. Really. I'm just doing, and I'm also doing stuff for Suffolk News now, which is like the West Suffolk paper, or has traditionally been the West Suffolk paper, but looking to make more of a kind of pan-Suffolk kind of impact. And so, yeah, so that's my path towards where I am now, really.
And so is everything that you're covering for all these different publications all Ipswich, or are you ever covering other teams in the region?
I've not really done very much in other teams at all, really. My entire career has been covering Ipswich, really. I mean, at the moment, obviously, I'm just doing the podcast, the stuff at TWTD, and which is shared with, some of it's shared with Suffolk News. So not really. We on the BBC show, we used to kind of get a lot of non-league stuff in, particularly on non-league weekends, you know, when they're non-league weeks, when during international breaks and whatever, we used to kind of we did one or two shows from non-league clubs. Bury, I think we did one from there. I'm a bit kind of Ipswich centric, really, in my kind of journalism and my general outlook, really.
Well, this is lucky, because it's, you know, probably one of your biggest passions, I would imagine, and you get to cover it almost exclusively. One of the big crossovers on our podcast is, you know, fandom and sports journalism and where they intersect. Would you say that it's easy for you to separate who you are as a fan from who you are as a reporter when you're covering Ipswich, or has that been a challenge? Is it less of a challenge now than it used to be? How has that sort of evolved over time?
It's interesting. I've done bits of sort of freelance. I did a report for the Sunday Times, Irish Sunday Times once. It's a different, it's very different, because you've got to think about the opposition far more, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? But I think in that instance, Hull City supporters were the opposition that I was sort of also writing about. So, yeah, so I think I write my reports, because I've been doing them for 20 odd years, from an Ipswich perspective. So I think there is a big, big difference in, I think it's, I think as you get older, perhaps it's easier to be more dispassionate. I think that's true. I think I can probably think back to when I first started doing it, and perhaps when I was writing the column for the local paper, being a bit more kind of one-eyed, as it were. Whereas now, I think the older you get, and a bit more kind of, and also perhaps because I've been out of the, I'm not on the terraces now. Do you know what I mean? I'm in the press box, and so you're in that different environment, aren't you? And I think that the environment you're in, to some degree, colours the way that you see a game. I think if you're in a very passionate situation where everyone's screaming at the referee to give a penalty every 2 minutes. I think it is definitely something. And I think that's something that I am reasonably decent at doing anyway, though. Do you know what I mean? And I think I can, I think people do sort of say that I'm not one-eyed, particularly, that I do kind of give an honest and a kind of more balanced assessment. I'd like to think I do anyway. People have said this in the past, so that's kind of what I aim to do, really. I don't not aim to be cheerleaders for the club, or cheerleaders for town. You know, if we lose 4-0 and we're terrible, then I'll say we've lost 4-0 and been terrible and it hasn't been the referee's fault. You know what I mean?
Something that we don't often get on our show, a story that we don't often see the likes of. Tell me about this ban that happened during the Paul Lambert days. It seems like you were banned from the press conferences. What was that all about?
Well, it was, I think, largely due to a manager under pressure who was being badly advised by some people at the club. An owner that really had kind of lost his way. I've generally had a pretty good relationship with the club, going back to, I think, the first press conferences I went to run when George Burley was manager. So, I mean, that's obviously quite a while ago now. Someone posted the team from a match on the morning of a game. It was a game at Lincoln, and that they obviously had inside knowledge of what the team was. And someone at the club made the mistake of mentioning this to the assistant manager rather than giving me a phone call and saying, Phil, can you remove this from the website? And so you've got a manager and an assistant manager who were a bit belligerent at the best of times, but were entrenched by that stage because there was pressure on them. You know, it's not an easy job being a manager, and being a manager of Ipswich at that point when we're in League One and we're treading water in League One. And so I think they felt that there was an element of everyone being against them, which I don't think was true, really. But anyway, they weren't too very... Anyway, so I got called aside after this game at Lincoln and had a bit of a chat with Stuart Taylor, who was the assistant manager, and I thought no more of it. I said, look, apologies for it. I've told the person involved that, you know, that in no way is this helpful to anybody, and not to repeat it again. And they kind of apologised and all this. So anyway, I thought the issue had been resolved. And then on the Tuesday night, we're playing Accrington at home. And it was a couple of days after my 50th birthday. So that night, there was a thing in the programme wishing me a happy 50th birthday. Anyway, at halftime, I was called aside by the press officer and told that I was banned from press conferences. So
happy birthday.
Yeah, so there's... Exactly, yeah. Which I thought was ridiculous, and all the other media sort of stuck behind me saying, you know, it's ludicrous to ban press, particularly. Usually when someone gets banned, it's because they've written something. Do you know what I mean? Journalists, something that they've written. But in this instance, it was someone and which I'd have obviously removed and had told them that this was a load of nonsense. Anyway, so I kind of kept this quiet for a couple of weeks because I didn't think it was going to do anybody good, any good to kind of for this to be out there sort of thing. And actually the club were, despite banning me, were actually quite helpful, and they were providing the audio from the press conferences and all that kind of stuff still. So we weren't actually kind of losing out massively, other than just not being there. And
when did that anyway, get resolved? Was it when there was a change of management or?
Well, yes. We kept it quiet for a few weeks, and then we lost. I can't think what the game was, but we lost quite convincingly to someone we shouldn't have lost quite convincingly to at Portman Road. And one of my colleagues tweeted, this is getting ridiculous. This, not only are we losing, actually we're banning journalists and all this kind of stuff. And it went viral. Anyway, it kind of went viral in an Ipswich sense. There were kind of free Phil Ham campaigns and all this kind of stuff. And it was very gratifying. Yes, petitions and things. Yeah, it was really gratifying. Actually, it was like having your own. It was like being at your own funeral. Do you know what I mean? To some extent, like, kind of all the things people were saying, reading your own obituary. And anyway, the day that it kind of all broke, it was made public. I actually bumped into Paul Lambert and Stuart Taylor in the car park. I said, "Look, this is now. People will know about this. You're getting loads of stick. Why not kind of, you know, just draw a line under it and move on?" And they were, you know, sticking with it. I said, you know, tell us who it was, and you won't, and until then you won't come back. And I sort of told them, I sort of knew who the person was in a kind of message board sense, but I didn't know them as an individual sort of thing. And but anyway, they said, oh, you know who it is, you know them, you bring it. And it was just ridiculous, really. Anyway, it was only a matter of time before they were going anyway, really. And eventually they went, and then we had another strange, by coincidence, it was the away game at Accrington, and I had nothing to sort of tell me that any situation had changed. Paul Cook was sat a little way along from us. This was during lockdown, of course. So Paul Cook was the incoming manager who was watching his first game. He was sat down there. Matt, whose name will come to me in a second, was one of the assistants. He was in charge. And then just before the end of the game, I sort of said, oh, am I all right to come down now that it's all changed? And said, oh yeah, it's fine now. I've been told it's okay. And everything, you know, just moved on from there. And since then, that was probably about March, February, March 2021. And then we had a takeover in April 2021. And so, you know, most of the people involved have moved on, really. And so the ownership since are very keen to foster relationships with everybody. And I suppose we're sort of still seeing to some degree as fan-based media. As you say, there is this kind of putting both camps sort of element to it. But I think I've seen perhaps more as a journalist than a fan under the new ownership than perhaps I was under the old ownership, because I think there was always this kind of, oh, you're only a fanzine type view from some people in the club. But I don't think I've ever had that at all since the new ownership has come in. And so things have moved on significantly, really.
It's an increasingly complicated thing nowadays. I think the more and more fan media out there there is, that the sort of intersection between journalism and sort of fan content. But I wanted to ask you about the days in League One, which have only just come to an end. We've spoken to some, you know, Sunderland fans about this. I'd love to speak to some Sheffield Wednesday fans about it to get sort of different perspectives on, you know, a traditionally huge club. Not to say that any of the other teams in League One aren't big clubs, but you know what I mean? A club that the perception is they shouldn't be down there, like Ipswich, Sunderland and so on. You know, some fans from the outside, obviously it seems like, oh, it must be, you know, it's just terrible, a nightmare. But I've spoken to some fans who are like, you'd be surprised, actually, there's sort of some kind of positives to it. What was your experience with Ipswich being down in League One overall? But how would you sort of sum up that era of the club?
I do remember Phil Hay, you know, who works for The Athletic. We played Leeds last game of the season before we got relegated. And he said, it'll be all right for 1 year. It was a bit of an adventure. And I think he's probably right in that, that you go around to new grounds and there's a bit of excitement. The other thing is you get relegated and it's all miserable. But of course, there's a positive side of it. There was a lot of positive singing the day we got relegated, or the day relegation had been confirmed a few weeks ago. But following our final game, we beat Leeds. And so there was actually an element of positivity. And everyone looked to League One and thought, well, here we go. We're going to win a trophy. You know, this is we're fighting for something, which we hadn't done for a couple of years. So. Reality quickly sets in, you know, and it wasn't a good experience. We started the first two seasons pretty well, and I think we felt we were on the way to something, but then performances drifted. I think we were found out to some degree, and I think that the manager didn't really have an idea of how to change things. So I think frustrations with being in League One and having to go to places like Accrington and Fleetwood and Morecambe and all these places that are a bit, you know, some of us grew up in an era where we're playing Barcelona. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I mean, we don't want to say any particular words, but yeah, that these grounds are a bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think we just felt, and we weren't, and we were losing at places like Accrington, you know, there was suddenly from, well, not suddenly, but over a period of time, Accrington were kind of, we were having a bit of a sort of, they were almost like a kind of rival in a way, which was just Hoagie ridiculous. Given the, well, it was, yes, exactly that. That we'd kind of failed to beat them on a number of occasions, even if we hadn't necessarily lost. And so I think it just felt like a frustration, really, that we were at this level. We were treading water. The owner, Marcus Evans, I'd lost his way, really. I mean, he came in 2007, and at that point, he was a relatively wealthy owner by Championship standards, and we had a real shot at getting into the Premier League using his money. Well, of course, he appointed the wrong people. He appointed Roy Keane as a manager. It didn't work out, and then by the time he appointed Paul Jewell, even, which was only 20 months later or something like that, the division had become much richer, and I think it was too rich for him. And he either wasn't willing to risk the sums that were required to get us to be contenders in that division, or he didn't have it. And anyway, at that point, and we're talking probably 2012, something like that, really, I don't think he really knew what to do with the club. And I think he liked being a football owner, and I think he liked the player trading side of it. I think he liked that kind of, you know, sort of raw business side of things. But I don't think there was any real strategy in running the club. Mick McCarthy was there, and Mick was a manager who was capable of getting the team to punch above their level, above the level of the financing of the club, which he did for a few years. But if your approach is based on that, you have a bad year, and you go down, and that's ultimately kind of what happened. We had a bad year. They got rid of Mick. They brought in Paul Hurst, who was a disastrous appointment. I think was wholly unprepared for Championship football. I think what he did probably worked, and his approach worked in lower league football, as it's actually shown since, hasn't he? Again with Grimsby previously, so he got to that point, which is ultimately landed us in League One. And at this point, when we're sort of treading water in League One, that's kind of when fans started to become a bit more belligerent. We were never in the kind of situation that you see at other clubs where bills aren't being paid and that kind of thing. So or perhaps like Reading at the moment, where you end up with fans on the pitch every week. It never reached that point, but there was just this kind of, people were voting with their feet as much as anything. Crowds were down, you know. In reality, you're probably talking about crowds for some midweek home matches of below 10,000, because obviously they count season ticket holders in the attendances at those games. Well, a large number of season ticket holders won't have been at those games, so attendances were increasingly low, and the general feeling around the club was low. So League One was a great was a factor in that, but it was probably the preceding decade that also had a role to play in that as well. But yeah, so we ended up in League One, and then we had the takeover, and then Paul Cook came in and never really got going. He made his famous demolition man comment in the press conference, which was to me. I mean, I asked him a question, which was just something along the lines of kind of, he kind of made it clear he didn't really rate many of the players that were already there. So I made a comment along the lines of, will one or two of the younger players get a chance? And then he went into this spiel about it. I'm going to be the demolition man. Everyone's going to be gone. The summer was gone. They brought in 19 players. It didn't really start off particularly well that season, which is, is obvious. Teams don't tend to start seasons well when they're kind of pretty much all new faces. But he wasn't the appointment that the ownership made. It was Marcus Evans's appointment, and he wanted to be a manager in the traditional sense, in the way that Mick McCarthy was a manager, in a way that Bobby Robson was a manager to a degree, that old style manager, John Lyle, that sort of. But the new ownership, they've got the modern structure with a head coach or the chief executive kind of thing. I don't think it was a happy. I don't think it was an ideal situation. And when things didn't go well, I think that the ownership were prepared to give him time, because obviously Paul Cook had got a CV which had shown that he was able to get clubs out of League One. But I think once it started to go poorly, he was probably given less time than if he had been their appointment. And I don't think he'd have been their appointment, if you see what I mean. They'd have appointed a modern head coach in the mould of Kieran McKenna, who they did ultimately appoint in December 2021. And I think that the mood lifted to some degree with all the signings and the takeover, but it lifted further with Kieran McKenna coming in, winning his first game against Wickham. Then I think he won his second game away at Gillingham 4-0, and we were, playing very attractive football. You've got a manager who was open and honest and easy to deal with from a media perspective. And I think playing football that wasn't with Paul Cook, but playing football with a philosophy that it was kind of part of the kind of mythologized Ipswich way, that kind of back to the Bobby Robson era and George Burley era, Jim McGilton era. And so everyone's kind of been behind the project ever since. And we didn't do enough to reach the playoffs in that first season. But then the second season, we started terrifically well. I had a bit of a wobbly spell around Christmas, a bit like this year. But then we're like a juggernaut on, I think it was 13 wins out of 15, wasn't it, in the latter stages of last season, to kind of plough our way. Plough is probably the appropriate for to plough our way to automatic promotion. And so, yeah, so I think League One was a game of two halves, League One. There was a sort of first half of it. It was four seasons in the end, I think, wasn't it? Four seasons. And the first half, we felt like we're treading water going nowhere. But perhaps to some extent, it was something we needed to kind of...
A reset.
Jolt the club. Yeah, jolt the club. I don't think the owners would necessarily have taken over if we hadn't been in League One, because I think they were looking around for a club that was in a position where it was a level below where it was. They probably got it cheaper than the whole. I mean, the ownership of the club in the main is a pension fund. So the pension fund wants to make money ultimately. So it was looking for what was a bit of a bargain they could invest into and then take forward. And that's what they've done. And now obviously we find ourselves fourth in the championship, which we did a podcast last night with Matt Holland. And he said, if you'd said to me a year and a half ago, we'd be on the in the fight for a promotion to the Premier League, I wouldn't have believed you. And I think it's very true. We've come an awful long way in a relatively short space of time.
Football is a crazy thing like that. It can change so quickly. How, obviously, you have seen a lot of highs and lows during your time following the club. How does this season rank, would you say, so far?
Well, very highly, I think. It's interesting. We got promoted in 2000 at Wembley to the Premier League. And subsequently, the next season, we finished fifth in the Premier League. No one had given us any, I think there were, I wrote a book years and years ago about it. And I found some cuttings from journalists who said that Ipswich got promoted it was almost, would they, I don't think the phrase was used, but would they come to regret it when they're losing 8-1 somewhere, And I thought at the time, I know people who put bets on us, not, the bets you get where Ipswich to win the title plus 15 points or whatever, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
thought, well, we'd been pretty much third, fourth, it was the first division then, wasn't it, for a number of years. So we had an established team and we were very good. We were very good at that level. I think we were exceptional. We were unfortunate perhaps not to get automatic promotion. And so I think that amongst fans, there was this kind of quiet feeling of expectation that, funny enough, we talked to Matt Holland about this again last night and I asked him exactly that. What was his thoughts before that season? And he thought the same thing, that they were, quietly thought, we're quite good. Do you know what I mean? We don't think we're going to be cannon fodder, as it were. And I think this feeling was similar this year when we went up, that we'd been so good in the second half in League One. And also last season, we played two championship teams in the FA Cup and we beat Rotherham 4-1 at Portman Road. And we took Burnley, who were runaway leaders, weren't they? Runaway title winners. We drew 0-0 at Portman Road with a weakened side. So it wasn't our first team. I mean, their side was probably weakened to a degree as well. And then at Turf Moor, they beat us in injury time. So
you knew you could mix it in the championship.
So we've got this kind of evidence that, well, actually, we've played championship sides and we've not been outclassed by them. And then we played Preston in pre-season. And I missed that game, but we, from all accounts, we dominated. We beat them 2-1, but their goal was kind of scrambled in the last 5 minutes when, you know what friendlies are like. We'd made 15 changes by that point. Yeah. So I think that there was a confidence going into the season and an expectation that we'd probably be around the playoffs. I think that was what most people saw us as playoff challengers, that we could probably be among those five. And I think that would still be, that would have been seen as a successful season, because you don't expect to come up a division and then start challenging for automatic promotion places, particularly in the championship at the moment with the parachute payments skewing things so far in favour of those clubs that have come down.
I mean, with the likes of Leicester, Southampton and Leeds, I mean, you really assume that's the top three there, really. The rest of the division
is... You think you're going to struggle to do better than them. And actually, I still kind of expect those three probably to go up, but we'll see how things progress. But we've given ourselves every chance. So, yeah, so we won first day at Sunderland, which, I mean, they were in the playoff final last year, weren't they? And we won, but we won. It was interesting because it wasn't a typical performance from the previous season. The previous season, we've dominated games, and you know the opposition were getting kind of 23% possession, and were just sort of spending their entire games sitting in their penalty area, just trying to deny our space to grind it out. You know, but we were playing a team that actually tried to play football against us, and actually had more of the ball, and yet we won. We looked dangerous, though they had all the ball. We looked dangerous, and we scored two goals. Went 2-0 up. So I think that gave us a lot of confidence. And then I forget what the second game was now, but off the top of my head. But anyway, we obviously got into we suddenly started to find ourselves in a groove where the momentum from the previous season. We were taking that into games and into the games this season, and we were in the top two, weren't we, for pretty much September to last month.
Which I know you say from your perspective, you know, from a much more insider perspective, you expected to be in and around the playoffs. But for as a more sort of casual observer, sort of from the outside who isn't following the Championship and League One so much, it looks like an outrageous achievement from McKenna. I think the average fan is like, oh my God, how on earth are they like where they are when they just came up from League One? But even though you had an idea that you might be in and around, you definitely couldn't have imagined that you'd be. I mean, in the first half of the season, it was like you were going to win the league, or challenging Leicester at least. You were up there in the top two.
And points totals of, you know, 2 point something a game, you know, it's just phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, remarkable. And also, you know, remarkable from Leicester and Leeds and Southampton as well, because I think someone said to me yesterday, I think we've got 63 points at the moment or something, I forget, that in 31, in half of the 31 last seasons, we'd be top of the table. Some stat along those lines.
It's like when Liverpool lost the title to Man City or whatever. If you were playing against normal opposition, you'd be running away with the league.
Yeah. I think if it was a normal season, we'd be top. I think that's the kind of the underlying point. So yes, I mean, I think we clearly Kieran McKenna has done a remarkable job.
But it's dropped off a little bit now. How is the atmosphere though? Is the atmosphere still, because you know fans can be very fickle. Sometimes they, you know, at the start of the season, it's God, if we're near the playoffs, that's outrageous, and then you give them this sweet of, you know, winning every game every week, and then all of a sudden you have a little dip and it's, why aren't we winning every game? Are the fans still staying realistic?
Yeah, I think so. Well, the majority are. There's always fans. Expectations change, as you say. And I think sometimes you kind of forget, don't you? That you forget that in August we'd have been happy with a playoff finish or even challenging for the playoffs. Now, of course, we're kind of expecting, not expecting, but we've been in and around, we've been in the top two, and so we've dropped away from the top two. But I think and that shouldn't take away from the fact that it's been a remarkable season. And I think most people realise this. And the dodgy run, I think we lost to Leeds, and Leeds pretty... took us apart at Road. We lost it well in the first half and gave ourselves almost two games. Do you know what I mean? We've lost four. I think we've lost 12 games in 100 in the league or something like that. Some ridiculously low figure. But anyway, so we lost two games in draws, and there are factors behind that, and there are positive results in that. We drew twice with Leicester. Not many teams will draw twice with Leicester this season. And both those games, we were the side that were finishing strongest, looking for a winner in those games. We beat Sunderland again at home in that period. So it's not as if we've had a wholly fallow period. We had a couple of games over Christmas where we had a number of injuries. And we drew 0-0 at home with QPR and 0-0 at Stoke, which were games that we should have won. If you look at where the teams are in the divisions. But they were individual circumstances, really. I think those and they came at a difficult time. We lost a few players to injury. Stoke probably we would have beaten if they hadn't gone down to 10 men. But I know that's a funny way of looking at it, but all they did was defend.
Yeah, they
at that
dig
point.
In. Sometimes it's harder to play against 10 men. The cliche, isn't it?
Exactly. That, and I think we struggled in that game because and I still think that's the kind of approach that is most effective against us, which a lot of League One teams tried, is just as the low block, as they call it now. And so we lost at Preston, and then we drew 2-2 with West Brom at home. Again, another game that we finished very strongly and probably should have won. And actually, West Brom had beaten us earlier in the season, and again, deservedly beat us earlier in the season. But I think the game down here showed that we'd improved. And then Wednesday night, went to Millwall, and we beat them 4-0 without really having to get out of second gear. They had a decent spell at the beginning. We took over. And then really picked them off as they made mistakes. And then the second half was thoroughly dull, really, because we saw it out so professionally. With some, you know, in that circumstance, you want a dull half, don't you? Do you know what I mean? You just see it out and with no panic whatsoever.
No injuries, nothing to report.
Exactly. Make your changes. So I think we feel, and of course we picked up 2 points on Southampton because they had a poor result the previous night at Bristol City. So it's getting around to kind of where we were. I think that we've had a more difficult period over Christmas and since Christmas, fixtures wise, perhaps than Southampton and Leeds have had. But we're now into a period of games. Millwall was the first of 9 games against teams that, as of going into Tuesday's games, all of those teams are in the bottom half. Well, Bristol City have now leapt into, I think, 11th or something
like
that.
They're all below you, that's for sure. So
Southampton, yeah, well, they're all lower or mid-table teams. So we've got a bit of an opportunity now to push on in the manner that we did last year. It's funny because we had a period last year where we had one win in eight over Christmas. And people start to sort of get a bit, oh dear, it's getting a bit worrying because there were the two teams above us then, South Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth. But obviously we finished like a juggernaut. Well, I don't imagine we're going to finish in quite that way. I don't see anyone winning 13 games out of 15 in the Championship, but you never know. This year's been a bit like that. But anyway, so we're off to Swansea tomorrow, who lost 4-0 to Leeds in midweek and don't have particularly good, aren't in particularly good form at home. So you could see us winning that. And then Rotherham at home Tuesday, Birmingham at home the following Saturday. So, you know, I think we're looking at it and thinking, well, here is the potential for putting a good run together. And you think at some point Leeds and Southampton would have difficult spells. I think we've got to kind of, I think if we match Leeds and Southampton at the moment, and we obviously got Leeds Southampton at home to play in at the end of the 9 games that I was mentioning, the one after that is Southampton at home, and then Southampton and Leeds play each other final game of the season, don't they? So
which works out moment, well for you,
which works out very nicely. So yeah, I think kind of it's in our hands at the moment, but it will be obviously be very tough because we've got these two other teams that are in remarkable form and really have players who largely have been bought to play in the Premier League and probably see them as Premier League. We're not bringing Italian internationals off the bench as they did when they played us. So we've given ourselves a good chance. And then, of course, if we don't make automatic promotion, then there's the playoffs. And as we've seen in the past, anything can happen in the playoffs. But still, you'd give us a decent shout in the playoffs, I think.
Absolutely, of course you would. Well, Phil, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing with us a little bit about Ipswich, especially this season.
Right.
We've got our fingers crossed for you. Do you want to drop a little plug for TWTD before you go? Where can our listeners check out the stuff?
Yeah, I write for twtd.co.uk, which is, you know, Ipswich Town News and Views. Do the Life's a Pitch TV podcast with Terry Butcher and Russell Osman, Mark Murphy. Guest last night was Matt Holland, but we've had people like Kieran Dyer, James Scowcroft, Marcus Stewart, George Burley. I don't want to forget anybody that will feel insulted now. Laurie Civil, Pat Gobbold, who was the PA to Bobby Robson and Sir Ralph Ramsey. Plenty of people from town's history. And Connor Chaplin was on as well, one of the first ones. Cole Skews, Luke Chambers, there you go. So you can catch up on their thoughts on the town, on various town eras, past and present. But yes, it's I think it's a very positive era at the moment for town. And I think we're kind of still hopeful we might make those one of those top two places.
Fingers crossed for you, Phil. Thanks again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. We really appreciate you listening. If you like the show, please share it with a friend. If you really like it, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast. This really helps us out a lot. We had a lovely time speaking to Phil today, and we can't wait to bring you more tales from football fans, journalists, commentators, and much more in the coming weeks and months. Thanks again so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the next episode of the Sportacos Football Stories podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.